Thank you for inviting me here, and it's a big honor to present our data recently published in this paper in molecular design of hypothalamus development. And I think that my task today to not just to present all data which are shown in this paper, but to simplify what we showed and to tell you what was exactly done important in this field, why it's interesting and how it can be relevant to the medicine and to future clinical research. And to explain this, I need maybe a little bit to remind you what is the hypothalamus. And the first photo is of Abraham Maslow. He's well known for his theory of hierarchical needs, physiological hierarchical needs. Very often it's shown as a pyramid. And if you look at this pyramid of the basic levels of body physiology, safety, love, belonging, these levels mostly and primarily controlled by the hypothalamus. Especially if you look at the very basic basis, it's growth, thirst, hunger, metabolism, sleep rhythms, and others. We have special centers in the hypothalamus regulating these functions. And hypothalamus itself is quite an ancient part of the brain and small part of the brain in vertebrates, especially in humans, and it's much bigger in evolutionary old animals because they're mostly driven by basic physiological functions. Also, how so many functions can be regulated by the hypothalamus? First of all, the hypothalamus is a neuroendocrine brain center regulating hormonal release in the whole body. And this works by regulation of anterior part of the pituitary. And second, release of hormones in the posterior part of the pituitary. If you know about oxytocin and vasopressin hormones, these hormones released from nerve terminals in the posterior pituitary, but the cell bodies are located in the hypothalamus. At the same time, this brain region is normal brain region with circuitries with other brain regions and intrahypothalamic connections. Therefore, neuronal cells located in the hypothalamus can be just normal neurons with say, excitatory and inhibitory properties with releasing fast neurotransmitter like glutamate and GABA. And therefore, there are many languages of the hypothalamus. First of all, this is, as I told already about hormones, which are, if we talk about hypothalamic hormones, this is mostly 99% are neuropeptides, as well as fast neurotransmitter. GABA, inhibitory neurotransmitter. Glutamate is excitatory neurotransmitter. Also, there are cells releasing dopamine and acetylcholine in the hypothalamus. So many functions, so many languages, and it's not surprising that this is maybe the highest cell heterogeneity in this small brain region for the whole brain. So anatomically, it looks like there are many sub-regions located close to each other, and this is irregular structure. It's considered that many of these subregions, they control specific function. For instance, we have feeding center, this is acute nucleus of the hypothalamus. Suprachiasmatic nucleus regulates day and night activity, paraventricular nucleus, it regulates stress, and so on and so on. But actually, the real life is more complicated, so they over influence each other, and the functions are all orchestrated together. So the hypothalamus orchestrate functions all together. So what was represents the major question? For us, the question was how the incredible hypothalamic cell type diversity is achieved and converted into a functional unit. And of course, here we use a new techniques. If we look at here the image, I just wanted to say that if we use old biased approaches, we cannot actually conclude about how the cell heterogeneity is, what is the assortment of cell types, what is the level of the heterogeneity. We need to use new approaches, the new methods, which allowed us a new large-scale systematic analysis. And one of them is a single-cell transcriptomics, which we use. I will tell about this a little bit later. And to avoid the ethical limitations and to collect enough data to conclude about the heterogeneity, we use animal models. And to explain what is single-cell transcriptomics, I want to remind you a little bit how the cells work, each cell works in the body. So we have nucleus and the DNA, and you through the genes are expressed through the transcription and generation of mRNA molecule, and mRNA molecule can provide protein synthesis in the ribosomes. And so if we collect actually these mRNA molecules, which is produced as a copies of genes located in DNA, we can conclude about which genes are active in the cell. And actually we can do it quantitatively, not only qualitatively, but also quantitatively. If we capture this specific poly A tail in this molecule, we can collect and can make conclusion. The next level is that you understand how then it's possible to do actually is due to development of new generation sequence technologies. So nowadays we can sequence many molecules at the same time because they have in the small space, they can be visualized with fluorescent tags, nucleotides, and the machine can read molecules from many cells together. To be specific and to understand that the specific molecules comes from specific cell, so they have all these barcodes. So barcodes for cell, when you capture cells, you give barcodes to all molecules, they glue these barcodes to the molecules. And the second is barcodes specific for each mRNA, so it's called unique molecular identifiers. And using this then to decode this information from the sequence machine, you can then align, first of all, genes which were expressed. You can address these molecules to the specific cell, and actually you can count number of molecules in the cells and say which genes are active. And actually, yes, we did it, as I said, we use a mouse brain, and we cut it the hypothalamus first in adult and dissociated cells, and we use this sequence technologies to reconstruct gene profiles of single cells in the hypothalamus. And this is actually the next level. The first previous level maybe was complicated, but next level is even more complicated if you talk about the methodology. Here you need to use already computational analysis, mathematical algorithms, because actually you need now to classify the cells based on the gene expression profile. So in this gene expression profile, they are considered as intrinsic properties of cell types. So there are many now actually available and actively used unbiased algorithms to reveal the heterogeneity. And we use one of them in our first paper on the hypothalamus about the heterogeneity and cell assortments in the hypothalamus, and show that there are more than 60 different cell types in the hypothalamus. And we did this work with Thomas Hochfeld, who is a big expert in the hypothalamus, because we understood now, and this is maybe not clear when you don't work with this, that you actually need to validate your data. You need to understand that the clusters, the groups you identify, they are biological relevant, and that these cell types, they really exist. And actually, mathematics sometimes it can give some artifact, but and we check, validate it, and we reveal many cell types. And we see that these hypothalamic cell types, they have neuropeptide as a signature in different cell types, cell class. So this is the first step, and I will not go further about how we then worked with incorporating these cell types into the functional circuitries, but our next question, and this is relevant to our recent paper in Nature, is how this heterogeneity is developed. So, and to understand it, we have two aims: to reconstruct the developmental process towards formation of numerous cell identities in the hypothalamus, and second, to identify combinatorial molecular codes driving the diversity. We have this assumption that, of course, the single transcriptional factors that cannot drive this molecular codes. We have assumptions that this is some combinatorial codes driving this diversity. And we use again the collection of different samples, but now in the range from embryonic stages to postnatal stages. We sequence cells from these stages from the hypothalamus and then integrated all cells together. So each dot here is a single cell. And after this computational analysis, we can visualize cells groups and obviously segregated into astroglia and progenitors, oligodendrocytes, and actually this big cloud is neurons. And we see this transition point to the neurons fate. We see the immature neurons, and finally these pellets are actually mature groups of neurons. And using this, then we can analyze data. We can do trajectories, and we did. And we first unravel the principles and the transcriptional factors underlying the trajectory towards neurons. There are many factors. Now, actually, it was the easiest part of this study, because this is kind of bridge mostly general principles and factors. But second level, when you go to the diversity, so you have many trajectories, and here it was more difficult to understand. So we also did trajectories for different cell groups. And here is an example of POMC neurons, which are involved in feeding behavior. They are located in arcuate nucleus. And this, as an example, we show that some factors, they are active on the first step of this differentiation, then later, and POMC together with some other factors that just come in at the end. It's early step of development, and it's mature cells. So if you look also to show the whole complexity, if you show a different cluster with these dot plots, so you see that there are many, many transcriptional factors. What is the logic of this? So if there are any general principle or systemic mechanisms, and what are causal relationships in this assortment of transcriptional factors? And here it was an important question, and here we decided to go to the concept well known of the gene regulatory networks. What it's about? That all genes have this hierarchy, and actually transcriptional factors, according to the way they form the spheres and targets, and actually they can activate the group of other transcriptional factors and other genes, and they also call regulons, these master genes, but altogether this group of genes is also called regulons. They're connected to each other, and at the end you see this network. This network can be reconstructed nowadays to the single cell level. So how is possible? Actually, if you look at what factors are active and use this available experimental data about ChIP-seq data, this data about the chromatin availability, about the epigenetic landscape, you can reconstruct groups of targets in each regulon which are directly regulated, and the expression is correlated with the ChIP-seq data. And at this level, we did the same again for the hypothalamus, and we found very interesting thing for me, it's just amazing and inspiring thing, that actually we reveal this hierarchical combinatorial molecular codes which are working as a different diversificative cascade, starting from glia and neurons bifurcation. So there are some factors which are responsible for this bifurcation, then for other groups of neurons, the group of factors which do this. And at the end, you see this transcriptional factors tuned cells, driving cells to the final cell fate. But this is not enough. These factors, important, this is a marker of the cell, but actually they have to go through different steps of this different level of combinatorial molecular clots. And now I think it's most interesting question for doctors, how it's important for medicine, how it can be used for the future clinical research. And we actually use these regulons, and this is reconstructed developmental clots, and combined it with clinical trials and done before genome-wide associated studies. So this is, you use UK Biobank, and what we found that actually we can reconstruct the role of different regulons, of different molecular codes in different diseases. And one is a good example is 1-CAT3. We worked a lot with this transcriptional factor. What is interesting that if you see here, just this is zero, it means that it has zero number of mutation in all analyzed data set. They don't have mutation in 1-CAT3. So actually, you cannot do any conclusion about the role of 1-CAT3 in diseases, right? But if you analyze not 1-CAT3, but 1-CAT3 reconstructed regulon, specifically for hypothalamic cells, specifically for the hypothalamic cell cluster, you see that the genes, which are target genes, they have mutation and quite a lot. And if you analyze this with proper weighting them, you see that 1-CAT3 is involved in obesity and metabolism disorders. So conclusion is our conclusion that we developed the first molecular classification of cell types in the hypothalamus, and we discovered hierarchical molecular codes providing for differentiation and leading to unprecedented adult heterogeneity. And what is I think interesting for future clinical research, I think this data can be used as a resource. We associated these hierarchical molecular codes with human brain disorders. I would like to thank Professor Tibor Harkanie, Professor Igor Adamyko, and their labs, and all other my colleagues and collaborators. Thank you for attention.
Thank you, Mr. Romanov, for your fascinating results. I think they show that with new techniques like next generation techniques, you get much more insight into the regulatory function of the hypothalamus.